Hi everybody, it's Chris Hales here, doing another update with Captain Daryl Zeleny. We've been monitoring over the last few months Daryl's progress as he's taken one of his properties deliberately through the foreclosure process in Canada, right through the courts. And if you've been following the updates, you'll remember the last time we spoke to him, he had actually been arrested and jailed for 3 days. And in those 3 days, they moved him 3 times because I think they were a bit nervous that a crowd might form and give them some trouble. But he was ultimately released, and that was the point where we left the last update. Since that time, he has actually had another court case, which we'll be talking about in this update. And in between his release and the last court case, Daryl did quite a lot of research and came up with a particular approach which appears to have been successful. And this is what we're going to talk about now. So how are you, Daryl?
I'm pretty good, Chris. Thank you. Thank you very much for the introduction.
Not a problem. Now, last time we left you, you just got sprung out of the big house, as it were. And
yes.
You're staying with friends and monitoring what's going on with the property. And Between being released and actually going back to court, you did quite a lot of research about your particular position. The sequence of events that actually took place.
Well, what they had done is restricted me from going back to the property. I also had to check in with the local police department basically every Monday. And, of course, that restricts you from finding employment, going, traveling anywhere, etc. So it was kind of an inconvenience, but it allowed me to get into the books and study various aspects of law, mostly admiralty law and contract law. And I just want to thank everyone out there who has sent me information with respect to the legal system, judicial system, and other pointers that was emailed to me. It was extremely helpful.
So yeah, there is a massive amount of support out there, actually, and there's a lot of good information.
Yes. So it just wasn't myself. It was information from that people have gathered all throughout the years and determined what actual private court system that is out there. Basically, I had done my research, found these courts on Dun & Bradstreet, you know, Manta, and they have their own DUNS number. They also file at the SEC, and I was able to obtain court records for 3 months showing transactions and the amount of money that actually goes through the courts. And of course, everything is filed. When you start looking at the docket numbers or the tickets that are issued, you find that they get entered into the system through the Ministry of Finance, then sold to the Bank of Canada, and then winds up on the stock exchange and is monetized there. The other interesting thing.
So you're saying that each court case is monetized?
Yes, it is. And a court, that specific court, would get a percentage of that docket number. In addition, if there is a bond issued against the individual, whether it be $1,000 or $10,000, a bid bond or a performance bond, if he fails to show up, mm-hmm. that bond is also monetized. Court gets a percentage of it. And an insurer will also then insure that bond. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we get into prison bonds.
Now, before
which
we step
is
into
another form.
Before we step into the prison bonds, so what you're saying is they're taking your signature, monetizing it inside the stock exchange system, inside the trading system, and the courts are getting a cut of that.
That's correct.
Would that go? Do you think it's the it's just forming part of the income stream of the company that is the court, or do you think it's being pocketed directly by the people involved?
It is part of the company. Now, the court system here is a Crown corporation, and of course, Ontario is a corporation formed in 1791, And it is based on this sort of data that is inputted through the UCC system that Ontario would sell bonds on the open market to foreign investors. And they raise capital this way.
And some of the bonds they sell are actually monetized signatures. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they are, because anyone who's in jail right now, they call it a criminal court. It's not. It's a private court. And you are in jail because you've entered into a contract with them. You've agreed to something. And what I found while I was in so-called the big house is normally what the prosecutor will do, he'll ramp up the charges. And like we say, a charge. Well, what is a charge?
Sounds like a bill, doesn't it?
It is exactly a bill. That's right. So they're going to ramp that up because they know they're going to get revenue from that individual if he's put in prison. If that individual fails to show up for his hearing and he has a bond, they will make money on that bond for him failing to show up. In addition, that there is an underwriter, there's an insurance company that underwrites that bond of the individual. So either way, they win. They win, or they actually make more money if the individual is incarcerated. Because now you're looking at 3, 5, 10 years, depends on the
sentence.
You know, the length of the sentence. That's right. So very, very interesting.
So do you think when they talk about the sentence, they're referring to the sentence that is the contract?
It is a contract.
What is your sentence? So you form a contract to stay in that building for say 10 years.
That's right. But they coerce you. If you fail to agree to their terms, they just throw you back into the holding cell until such time as you capitulate. You agree to some restriction of movement or payment of a fine or something like that.
Extraordinary. And you're actually tracking
yes.
this through the system using the SEC data and the DUNS numbers to track the progress
right.
of things through the system.
And also the docket numbers. The docket numbers and or ticket numbers. Last night I showed you the information on the financial management system at the U.S. Treasury,
mm-hmm.
which shows the insurers and the amount of money that they have underwritten. And remember, we're talking about those figures in there that are in the millions and billions
of dollars.
Well,
they're in the hundreds of millions, yeah. And
hundreds of millions, that's right.
That's a lot of money. So that would be the sum total of underwriting they're doing at that point in time in things like, you know, bail bonds and sentences for jails, etc.
And yes,
that's a big, very big business, extremely big business.
And those numbers reflect only a percentage. It may be 10 cents on the dollar, it may be 5 cents on the dollar. So they're only underwriting a percentage, and that's reflected in those overall numbers there. So we can take and multiply it by 90, and you would see what you would get. It's phenomenal. And that's why you're seeing governments increase the length of terms on sentences and these so-called tough-on-crime bills that they're passing in Parliament and the legislatures right now.
Okay. It just increases the revenue.
Yes.
Yeah, what a wonderful system. And now, how did that play
mm-hmm.
into your... Did any of this play into the way your court case actually evolved the day you were there? Were you able to use any of this information in your court case? I know it's a great indicator of how corrupt the system is, but did it play into the actual, the court exchanges on the day?
No, it didn't. What did play into it was the facts. And basically the facts stood on its own. I filed a motion to have the charges dismissed. And what I did is ask for the police officers' notebooks, photocopies of their notebooks, any tape recordings, and of course the evidence that the Crown had gathered. And it was basically going through the officers' notebooks that I was able to determine that they had colluded with the the lawyer for the Bank of Nova Scotia in order to force the charges. And in the notebook, he had called up several people. He tried to get them to make a complaint. Because, of course, you can't, if there's no victim, if there's no complaint, then there's no charges.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he tried two individuals and was unable to get them to complain, called the lawyer back according to his own notes. And what they had done is coerced another person from the property management to file a complaint. Of course, this individual does not have an interest in the property. They're just an agent or an actor for the bank. And through their own statement, what they had done is lied. And through interviewing witnesses, I was able to counter that blatant lie.
How many witnesses did you interview?
I interviewed three witnesses, and I also had the statements from police officers. So there was a total of nine, I believe, documents that was supporting evidence.
Did you interview the witnesses
in criminal code?
Sorry, Daryl, did you interview the witnesses in court live, or was it done afterwards? I mean, done as part of the research.
It was done as part of the research. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what a witness must do is go to a notary and have an affidavit. So it must be signed. There must be an oath taken that his statement is true, correct, and materially complete in order for it to be an actual statement. Mm-hmm. None of this procedure was done with respect to the prosecution or the peace officers. Because, of course, there was no victim in this.
So when you say none of it was done with respect to the peace officers, does that mean you didn't interview them? Or they didn't do any interviewing?
They did not do any interviews. What they've asked for was statements from people. Some refused to give statements. The ones that did not have a sworn affidavit to their statement, so therefore it's not evidence.
Mm-hmm. Did they try and present it as evidence?
Well, yes, because that's the basis of the charges. Basis of the charges was that I had threatened a mover, and I had committed a crime of some sort. But however, there is no victim in this case. There is no complaint from a victim.
Indeed, in fact, they had no ability to prove that you'd threatened anybody by the sound of it.
Well, I actually had one of the other witnesses, counter the so-called complaint that was not signed. And this evidence was presented in the courtroom.
So the complaint that they had, which was a fabrication, wasn't signed anyway.
That's correct. And you can see through the officers' notebooks and the telephone conversations going back and forth that they actually colluded with the bank in order to make this, to force these charges, I believe is what was written.
Mm. So how receptive was the judge on the day?
Well, this is an interesting one. Like I said, I did a lot of research. I know I'm walking into an admiralty court. I know it's a private court. And I know it is what they're going to do is give you an offer to contract. Mm-hmm. And so you have to counter it. So, of course, I wore my best suit, shaved, cut my hair, everything, had my briefcase. And what normally happens in the morning is the lawyers and the judge in the judge's chambers will discuss the cases. So I showed up in time for that, and I was able to sit in the room, and I was quiet, sitting along the wall. And they discussed the various docket numbers and what the Crown is asking for, term of a sentence and so forth. And it came to mind, I spoke up and said, good morning, I'm here for that matter. And he said, well, who are you? And I said, I'm Gerald Zeleny. I'm here to answer to those charges. And I said, I'm sorry, and who are you? And he says, well, I'm Justice so-and-so, and what are you doing here? I said, well, no, I'm basically here to discuss the motion to dismiss the charges today. He asked me if I have a lawyer, and I said, no, I don't. I'm here to represent myself. Upon that answering that question, he politely asked me to leave, as I can't be in the chamber at this point, even though they're discussing my case and how they're going to determine what sort of penalty I should get.
Now, when they're discussing these cases before the sessions, mm-hmm. it sounds to me like they're actually predetermining the outcome. Is that actually yes. is that what they're actually doing?
Normally what will happen is a lawyer or an individual will be represented from by a lawyer. And he would have agreed to some term that you're going to get 3 months, a 3 month sentence and a fine of X amount of dollars. So that's determined beforehand. And that's what they discuss in the morning. So of course you're there, you're represented by a lawyer.
So
and
this,
those
back-end
deals are done.
Are these in cases where we've pled guilty to something and they've prearranged it with the Crown?
Yes, that's correct.
And what if you're actually contesting the charges?
I'm sorry, say that again?
What if you were contesting the charges? So, they really shouldn't be predetermining anything because you're protesting the charges, defending them, and of course there is a hearing. You know, there's evidence and witnesses and discussion and so forth. And what I'm asking is, do they predetermine the outcase even if you are contesting?
Yes, well they do, but what they do is keep you, if you're contesting, then they roll it over to another date.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that keeps you in jail longer, and also makes them more money.
I suppose it would. So you're asked to leave that particular meeting, and you then, I presume, had to go and wait in court until your case actually came up.
That's right, and it's at that point you discuss the case. You never want to argue the case. When you argue a case, you get into debate. And when you debate, then it gives the judge the opportunity to referee.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the judge will ask you how you plead in this case. And I say, well, I thank you, Your Honor, for the offer to plead. However, we must first determine who the actual owner is and who the victim is. So mm-hmm. he offers a contract. I counter. I conditionally accept your offer. And then I put my own conditions in there. So what this is a tennis match going back and forth.
So you're actually offering, you agreeing conditional to the bank proving that they own the property.
That's right. And
is that the only condition you put on it?
Well, it bounces back and forth. So what I had done is I prepared a memorandum beforehand as part of my case, and basically there's 8 items that I outlined. So they have made some charges and accusations against me. I have countered with the same sort of thing, and this is a declaration of facts, much like a declaration of facts in true commercial bill you would apply in a UCC filing.
Mm-hmm.
And number one is the Crown failed to produce a sworn and signed affidavit and a sworn and signed complaint from the victim in this matter that is true, correct, and material complaint, and they have failed to define who the injured party is that has a claim of right.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a legal fiction cannot have a claim of right on a property because it is not a real person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or a real being, I should say. Number two, the Crown has failed to show or provide proof of claim to show clear title of the property. I had actually went to land registry and obtained copies about 3 days before the hearing and showed that I was still on title. And then the number three, the agent for the bank, the property manager, was acting on behalf of the lawyer for the Bank of Nova Scotia, intentionally made false accusations in her statement, has not sworn an oath or an affidavit or attested to the document. Or to the signed complaint.
Mm. So if you hadn't objected, the judge would have accepted the police version of the story?
That's right. If you don't show the facts there, because what they do, they don't go in truth. They don't disclose all of the facts. What they do is just present what they want in order to get the verdict that they want and to fulfill the charges that they need in order to keep the money coming in.
But given that they had an unsworn statement, unsigned statement, as their only, literally their only complaint, would the judge have accepted that as being a legitimate complaint had you not said anything? Well, isn't that fraud?
Yes, he would.
Isn't that fraud from the bench?
Or a
miscarriage of justice?
It is a miscarriage of justice, but if you don't speak up, then it's presumed as fact.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the onus is on you.
It's unchallenged, so it's presumed to be fact.
It's unchallenged. That's right, and we know that from UCC filings, don't we?
Mm, we certainly do. Fascinating.
Yes.
So how did the argument, let's not call it an argument, how did the exchange with the judge proceed once he realized that you were going to not contract with him unless you got your terms, the terms that you wanted?
Well, what we had done is basically there were four charges, and through the exchange back and forth, evidence was presented, and the evidence was the memorandum here, which had sworn affidavits from my part that countered the allegations put forth by the Crown.
Mm-hmm.
So what they were asking for was, well, basically they had these four criminal charges, and the offer and counteroffer basically was taken down to they were dismissed. They wanted to give me a ticket for trespassing, which is what the first thing should have been. However, I was able to show under Section 35 of the Criminal Code that I am, because I have an interest in the property, my private property was stolen, approximately $40,000 worth of equipment that was supposed to be protected by this property management company. That was entered into evidence. And I also entered into evidence Section 35 of the Criminal Code that states that I have every right in this, under the Criminal Code, to defend my property peacefully, which is what I was doing, mm-hmm. which the officer's notes stated as such.
Mm-hmm.
The officer's notes also stated that they were given copies of the UCC filings and orders and that they couldn't read it and that they were kidnapping me against my consent. That was also included in the Declaration of Facts.
Hmm.
So what we had done is basically whittled away the charges down to trespassing, and the offers of contract, what I agreed to was to the ticket, which is a provincial offense, is you get a ticket for trespassing, mm-hmm. with the caveat in there that I shall challenge the Superior Court to determine who the actual owner of the property is. Because the judge was quite forthcoming and said that it is not within his purview to determine at that stage. So, of course, he's got his little box, his little restrainer that he has to, remain in, and he could not rule on that.
So he gave you the right to challenge the banks?
Challenge the banks.
In the Superior Court.
In the Superior Court to provide proof of claim. So basically, he hit the tennis ball out of there, back into the other court. Which is another challenge.
So what was the judge's attitude to you during this exchange?
He was polite. What we're finding in this is we're getting evidence on the record, which is important. And it was to the point, he knew what I was trying to do. He knew it wasn't within his powers to accept those certain things. So therefore, at the very end, he said something to the effect, "Well, Mr. Zeleny, the Crown has conceded on all these things. Will you accept the ticket with the option, or with the, yeah, I think it was with the option to challenge the Superior Court for them to provide the proof of claim?" And at that point, I accepted the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And all restrictions were lifted, except for that one that we agreed upon.
which was to pay a fine.
No, there was no fine. There was just a ticket, and in that it says I can challenge the option within 12 months to challenge the Superior Court to proof of claim of the actual owner of the property.
So what, with that option available, what will your actual challenge be? How will it be framed?
Well, it would be a civil lawsuit against, if I choose to enter back into that ring, into that court system, because we know it's an admiralty court, to basically sue them and have them provide proof of claim. Because the first time, what they do is sharp practices is an administrative procedure, so you do not get to present evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So here, what we would do is now we have a criminal court ruling that we can now challenge the bank in the Superior Court to have them actually provide the document, because the Crown was not able to show proof of claim in the criminal matter.
Can they sell your property, you know, in the time between now and when you get them into court again? Can they turn around and sell your property lawfully, legally?
Yes, they could. Legally, they could. So as a stopgap measure, what you would file was a certificate of pending litigation, which mm-hmm. means I have an action against that bank. And basically, that is like a lien against the property. So anyone who would buy it would, of course, have someone do a search of the title and say, hey, this is on here. There's pending litigation for X amount of dollars. I don't suggest that you purchase this property because you may not get it for 10 or 20 years or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So that's called a certificate of litigation.
But you have to genuinely have some pending litigation, because I believe I remember you saying that the certificate of pending litigation had to be issued by a judge.
That's right. So you got to go back into their system. You have to show that there is an action against the bank, and you have just cause because the bank has committed fraud. And that was actually part of the evidence that was presented, that I had withdrawn my contract from the Bank of Nova Scotia because they had committed fraud. Mm-hmm. And of course, as we all know, fraud vitiates a contract.
Indeed, indeed. So in order to use the certificate of pending litigation to stop them from selling the property, you will have to initiate the court case.
I would have to initiate a court case, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, what we can do, because they have committed fraud, we could file a UCC declaration and facts against the bank.
Mm-hmm. And go after them for the money anyway.
That's right.
From all the payments you'd made fraudulently, well, you'd made in a fraudulent contract, you could claim from them plus triple damages, no doubt.
Triple damages. In addition to that, there's more than one fraud. We have to, of course, remember that there's the LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate, mm-hmm. where all these banks colluded to rig the interest rate. So that's the fraud, the other fraud. Mm-hmm. And of course, they do not have the authority to coin money. And that's fraud number three.
Which they are doing whenever they monetize your signature or they create a loan. Absolutely, creating
that's
money.
Right.
Mm.
So these are their own laws that they're breaking here. And that unless you bring it to their attention, they will not rule on it. And they will go in favor of the banks because that's the easy way, because they get a portion of whatever is monetized through that docket number, through that ticket, through that bid bond, through that prisoner's bond,
yep.
etc.
Yep. That's just a ridiculous, ridiculously criminal system when you look at it in its true light.
Yes.
How was the Crown solicitor through all this?
Quiet.
Really?
Yes.
No particular objections?
No, actually. When he was presented with these declaration of facts, he basically conceded. Actually, he was quite accommodating at the end there when I refused the ticket. I said, we haven't determined yet who the property is. And it's actually him that made the suggestion that in the court findings that this be inserted, that I challenge the Superior Court. And
he suggested that? That's a very interesting thing to do.
Yes. Well, Chris, if you think about it, they wanted this out of the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
It's messy.
So, but it wouldn't be the Crown solicitor wouldn't actually be involved in what you did next. So it's a way of basically just pushing it out the door.
Right. It's getting out the door, off my plate. I don't have to deal with it anymore.
Mm.
Now, what the Crown refused to meet with me. There was a couple times that I had requested a meeting. He refused.
Does he have that right?
No, he doesn't. Well, I suppose, yeah, he has a right to refuse, but he should have talked to me about the case. We could have resolved it before going to court.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you step to honor, of course, right?
Yes.
There's no reason for an arbitrator in this matter is because there is no victim, and we could have saved the court time.
Hmm. Do they make money out of the mere fact that you've been in court? Is there some commercial aspect to it?
Because I had a bond against me. I had a $1,000 bond.
Okay.
If I failed to appear, if I failed to show up at the check-in time when I was supposed to, I could be arrested and thrown back into the prison.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, of course, it's in their interest to keep the game going, to extend it another 2 weeks, to postpone it.
Yeah. Now, the other actor in the court would be the clerk. Any kind of resistance from the court clerk?
No, not at all. Actually, they were very helpful. They, while I was waiting, I was asking them about the CRIS system, which is the court registration identification system, where the docket numbers are entered into the computer and then sent to either the Bank of Canada or the Federal Reserve.
Did they realize that it's being sent to a bank?
No, they did not. What they would do is, the lady was telling me, is their system is programmed, so it has a series of fields that they go through and they fill out at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Now, on this one here, it starts with 1-3, but a normal ECC would start with 2013, which, of course, is the date and the series of numbers behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that 20 is a pre-filled. She was not familiar with what I was talking about. She said, I only enter data. I don't know where it goes. I push a button and it's sent. So it's actually sent to the Minister of Finance or the accounting office, and then it's collected. And then month end, it goes to, or at the end of the day or at the end of the week, it goes to the appropriate bank. And, of course, I asked her, I said, well, what number were you entering last year? I said, was it 1-2? And she said, yes. So not having physically seen the system, but based on the information and talking about the docket numbers that I was showing her, we can conclude that last year was 2012 and this year is 2013, which goes to their ICON system. Or in the US, it's called the CRIS system.
When you suggested that to them that the data actually goes to the Minister of Finance, were they surprised?
Well, yes, because she says, oh, I don't know where it goes. I just push enter.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, you want to keep things compartmentalized so people don't know exactly what they're doing to the full extent and the implications further down the road.
Yeah, well, that's the game that they always play.
And yes.
We know from the work we're doing at the moment on the banks that they are extremely compartmentalized, and people who poke their noses across those borders are certainly not particularly welcome. That's become very clear, that the compartmentalization is not just black projects, it's in the banks.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. So at the moment...
It's a huge...
Yep.
I was going to say it's a huge, huge puzzle. And fitting all the pieces together. And, of course, we don't have all the pieces yet.
Mm.
But this is how they raise money, like I said, through their bonds. Even when we go to the larger scale, when we were tracking the bond sales here, and I think I discussed it before, what they were doing, there were $6 billion in bonds that were sold. There were no certificates issued. They were interest payments only to these banks. No money was actually transferred to the government of Canada. All they did is make the taxpayer pay interest to these banks.
When you go back and challenge the banks, are you actually going to challenge the fact that they didn't loan you money, in addition to all the other aspects that you're going to challenge?
Yes, in addition to, well, it's already been filed on UCC against the banks. They just don't know it yet. Mm-hmm. In addition to the Crown, remember we talked about contracts, okay? Mm-hmm. An offer to contract was presented to the Crown on April 4th. If you do A, B, and C, or if you do items 1 through 16, you will have engaged in a contract with me. If you take my house away, if you incarcerate me, if you deny me my property, all these things have a value and 100 or 99% pure silver. Okay, so what they had done actually by incarcerating me for 3 days and doing this, each individual who stepped into the fray will now get a invoice. I just haven't had time to do that. So the Crown has entered into it, the judge has entered into it, the police officers have entered into this contract with me. So they have their contract, and I have my contract. I have my charge and fee schedule, okay? Mm-hmm. They had theirs. Mm-hmm. Right now, the one judge is up to $20 million.
I wonder how nervous that makes them.
Well, they don't know yet.
Hmm.
Well, they will now after this this interview, won't they?
Well, if they're paying attention to it. Maybe you should send them. Maybe you should send them a link, because it's, you know, the judge is there in the court to arbitrate contracts. You know, if the judge was courtesy noticed, he knows he's looking at a contract. He might scoff at it because he thinks, oh well, they can't enforce things, but I can. But you know, I wonder how much doubt there is in his mind at this point in time that there might be an enforcement that. Mightn't be too welcome.
That's right. There's an enforcement that's just around the corner, and they know this. The documents have been provided to them. Whether they read them or not is not my fault. They know they're, like, when we talk about law and international law in treaties, a treaty between countries is higher in the pecking order than the country or state laws.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have a conflict, and that must be resolved. The fact that they choose to ignore those certain laws or those treaties will turn around and bite them later on.
Well, they certainly ignore all of their own rules at their own convenience. It's been going on for a very long time. So
put a stop to it.
Oh, yes, it is. So the next step for you in this instance is to instigate the next part of the court action and then get the certificate of pending litigation.
That's right. This commits an action against the bank, have them show proof of claim, and in addition, we'll parallel that with a UCC declaration of facts.
Mm. Keep the pressure on.
And actually, I was quite nice with my memorandum to the judge when I requested that this matter be dealt with in the commercial registry and not in this court. And the remedy that I seek with respect to these charges is to dismiss this matter with prejudice, which he did.
Good. But it didn't get resolved in the commercial registry in the end. It was actually dealt with in the court.
That portion was dealt with in the court. Mm-hmm. I have also filed
these actions. You're referring to the actions you're going to take in the commercial registry?
I've already taken them.
Ah, yes, you did. You actually filed one against the sheriff, I believe?
Against the sheriff, against the CEO of the bank, and there was one more. Can't remember what it was now.
So the CEO of the bank now has a problem with his credit rating.
Yes, he does.
Indeed.
I believe I sent you a copy of that, right? The one proof?
The sheriff, I saw the documentation on the sheriff and how that appeared as a note on the individual's credit rating, which I'm sure will cause them a problem if they go to try and do any business with the banks at this point in time.
That's right.
Very interesting. Anything else you want to cover off, Daryl, before we
finish the chat? No, I think I'm pretty much... And what we'll do, Scott and Tex and I, we were working, and I apologize to the people. We haven't got the instruction thing up and completed yet. For those who wish to pursue their courtesy notices to get enforcement and file it on the registry. Then once you have that and once you have everything perfected, you can now walk back into their equity courts, their admiralty courts, and have the judge arbitrate who actually owes who on these charges that you're presenting. That's if, of course, the other party fails to come to some sort of agreement out of court.
Would you do that in equity court or in the admiralty courts?
They're one and the same here.
Are they?
Yes.
So the court was the court that you were in court of equity, or was it just commercial court?
Just a commercial court or
commercial court. So you go to a higher court. Yeah. To have that arbitrated.
Yes.
Indeed. Yeah, well, I keep pulling Scott into other things, so have to cop some of the blame for that too.
We keep getting distracted, don't we?
Everyone's keeping one another extremely busy with, lots of really important stuff. I mean, the new bond documents come through from Heather sometime this week. We're going to be extremely busy this week.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact,
it'll create another
ripple in the force. And speaking of which, there was a YouTube that you pointed me at, which you felt characterized the conversation you had with the judge. And it was a nice little piece that I'll note here. It was called Death Star Canteen by Eddie Izzard.
That's right.
And if you go to YouTube and Google Death Star Canteen, it's a very funny comedy routine based on the Star Wars character Darth Vader trying to get lunch in a canteen.
Yes.
And very, very interesting conversation ensues with the guy who's serving up the food, which is extremely amusing.
You use logic and you say, well, you'll still need a tray.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's all I used was basic logic and their evidence against them.
Way to go. Yeah, it's a really insidious system they've got going. They would have let all that fake evidence stand had you not actually called their attention to the fact that it was fake.
That means
that they're fundamentally corrupt. They're not interested in justice at all. We're not interested in justice or justness or anything that's morally correct. All they're interested in doing is collecting the money on their charges.
That's right.
Disappointing.
So the thing you have to do is you have to have charges that are far superior to theirs. And now you can negotiate.
Well, it is actually a commercial court, so that's what you're actually there for. Although they don't tell you that.
They don't tell you that. Yeah.
That's the way it works. Daryl, and again, on behalf of everybody, thank you for your time and for the amazing work that you've been doing for months now, proving that the system is as corrupt as it is. And no doubt there'll be another chapter in this story before it's done, unless, of course, we get some interesting events happening that might turn our attention completely away from all this nonsense and into something more useful, like building a new planet. That would be good. But, on behalf of everybody, thank you for everything you do.
And thank you for listening to me today, Chris. Thank you very much.
No problem. Till next time.
All right.
Cheers.
Okay. Bye-bye.